This is Eastman's Elevated Podcast. I have on great guests that are really knowledgeable, consistently successful. We're able to dive deep down the rabbit holes of these different subject matters of shooting, of physical fitness, of mental toughness and drive. All the different skills that make up a complete hunter that you can become.
Here's your host, Brian Barney.
Hey, what's happening, guys? Got a brand new Eastman's Elevated for you. So on today's podcast, I have on Lane Walters. So we visit a bit about Alaska and hunting elk and we catch up kind of. He did my first filmed hunt in Wyoming years ago. But really, I have him on to talk about being involved and being informed in the political system that is our hunting and our hunting rights and helping protect our hunting heritage. And so Lane does a great job at making sure that his voice is heard and making sure that our voices are heard. We have to protect what we love so much. And so it's a great conversation. We talk about some different things that are coming up. And definitely what we can do to stay informed and stay involved. So important conversation to have. We'll get right into it. I just want to thank a couple sponsors. I want to thank Silencer Central. So Silencer Central does silencers. And so silencers, they're going to reduce the decimals or the noise of your rifle, which, you know, helps to not blow out your eardrum so you can hear bugles, but it also helps to get a follow-up shot on an animal as it doesn't make quite as much noise or sound. They also reduce recoil, which I think makes the rifle more accurate. And, you know, they make some different models, like the Banish Backcountry is a great hunting silencer. So you can check that out. Silencer Central is the company. They'll help you get the paperwork done. They can thread your rifle for you. They're just leading the charge in silencers and doing a great job at it. So we really appreciate their support here on the podcast. So reach out to those guys if you're interested in a silencer. I also want to thank Zamberlin Boots. Zamberlin Boots, they just don't cut any corners as far as craftsmanship, as far as materials. They build the absolute best boots they can. They actually take each Gore-Tex booty and test it individually to make sure it's not going to leak so you have a waterproof piece of footwear. So you guys know how I love the hunting shoes. I really like the Saluths. Those are a great shoe, and then I also like the Anabasis, and they have some other offerings as well, but those are my two favorite. They also make that in a low-cut boot. They're just super lightweight, and a pound on your foot is like 10 on your back. When you think of taking 30,000 steps in a day, you have an extra pound. That's an extra 30,000 pounds your legs have to lift. So I really like the lightweight footwear. I like it waterproof. Those shoes are waterproof. They come with a Vibram sole, which is great grip. So if you're in the market for some new boots or shoes, make sure to check them out over there at Zamberlin. I also want to thank Swagger Bipod. So Swagger builds a great bipod. You can swivel to track your target on them. They're kind of spring tension loaded, so it's great for uphill, downhill. And that swivel motion, like you can track an elk if it's walking to the right and just swing so you don't got to pick up your bipod and set it back down. They make bipods of all different heights. They make shooting sticks. And shooting a rifle accurately is all about your rest. So check those guys out over at Swagger. And then I also want to thank Black Ovis. So Black Ovis is an internet retail shop that has absolutely everything you need for your next hunt. They have a super knowledgeable staff, great name brands, as well as their own name brand. So if you're in the market for some new gear, you can use the promo code ELEVATED10, save 10% off your order over there at Black Ovis. And thanks to those guys for their support. Over at Eastman's, we're busy. I'm going to be working on the Anchored In for this Bow Hunting Journal magazine that's coming up, and always have new articles coming out, great staff articles, and then our subscriber stories are super. Like, you get to see the biggest elk, biggest deer that are harvested each year and kind of read into the story and the hunter's process. Sean Mellon's on our cover this week. We also have Sam Davis coming up, who's also published in the magazine, him and his wife. So it's just a great magazine. You can check those out. Check out our Eastman's Beyond the Grid. We got some good ones coming out. I saw Dan's elk edit. That thing is absolutely insane. You guys are going to love that video. Saw a late season mule deer hunt of mine that I'm real happy with. So you can check us out YouTube and just search Eastman's Hunting TV and check out the videos that are on there. And you can also check out the Elk Collective and the Mule Deer Course or the Mule Deer Collective. We're rebranding that, trying to get some more people involved and to keep putting out good information about mule deer. But I'm really proud. It's like everything I've learned about hunting mule deer in the last 25 years, different habitats, different seasons, different states. So all that information is available. Just put in the promo code BrianMDC. That'll save you 10%. But if you have a mule deer hunt coming up, you're sure to shorten your learning curve by going through that Mule Deer Collective, especially for the cost of it, to be able to give yourself a better chance at success. It's a no-brainer to me. So check that out. And man, let's get into this podcast. It's a good one with Lane Walters. Really appreciate him coming on. Appreciate you guys listening in. I am your host, Brian Barney, Eastman's Elevated. Here we go.
All right, man. Man, matching bears in the backdrop there, that's pretty nice. We didn't plan that.
That's actually Becca's elk from a couple years ago.
Oh, is it?
We ended up packing that out, and she was going to use it for something, and then she decided just to go ahead and hang up the elk hide like that over the little bowl that she bought. You can kind of see a picture there. There's a glare, but that's us with the kids. That's the one where we backpacked in and had the kids back there with us, and she was able to shoot that bull, which she passed on a 320 bull opening weekend back in there. That since the kids were with, she shot that dick just so they could be with when she shot one.
Oh, that's super cool, man. Yeah, I should have noticed it was an elk. I really like the setup or the mount where you have the picture, the elk head, and then the elk hide. I've always thought about tanning a hide like that. It looks good.
Yeah, it's fun. And then this is where she does all of her work meetings now. And so this is always her background for like her doing work meetings, which I think is awesome because nobody else that she works with hunts at all. So,
dude, that's awesome. Yeah, good for her. Yeah, I always like to represent and support hunters. I do all my meetings from here as well. And so, they get a dose of some mounts for sure, which is a good thing.
That's awesome.
Yep. Well, good, dude. It's good to catch up to you again. I saw you at the expo. We filmed a hunt together years ago, but I try to keep in touch. We just both get so busy, but it's good to get you back on the podcast, man.
Hey, dude, I appreciate you having me come on. When was that? 2016, because Camden was a brand new baby. Mm-hmm. It's been a while, but then that was one of your first hunts filmed, right?
It was. That's right. Yeah. We filmed that buck in Wyoming. Yeah, that was a good hunt for sure.
Yeah, you ended up shooting that on my birthday, if I remember right.
Oh, that's super cool, man. Yeah, no, that was fun. It's always a challenge when you're trying to capture hunts. Do you do much filming anymore or just hunt for yourself?
Yeah, I've been filming for Derek Wolf, that retired Broncos player. I do some of his stuff. Go out with Omar. He goes by Crispy11B. Do some of his stuff still. And then I just film everything with like kind of the family, my own personal hunts, everything that I go out and try to make just – I want to do 2 to 3 good short films a year, just make it fun, keep it fun. And, yeah, it's a good time.
Oh, good for you. Well, man, Colorado, there's some big change in the air over there. Like, you guys have been battling it all recently, the wolves and then the mountain lion ban. And now there's some change in the regulation coming too, right?
Yeah. So the wolves, that's said and done. I mean, that's kind of hard to combat right now. So that's kind of, I'm going to put that on the back burner. The mountain lion ban, they're still trying to gather signatures to try to put it on the ballot for this year, where they're calling it a trophy hunting mountain lion ban. And they're basically, all it's going to do is take our mountain lion season to less than a week. Whereas right now, I believe it runs for up to 4 months. And they're running it under the skies of, oh, it's just going to ban trophy mountain lion hunting, but it's going to ban all mountain lion and bobcat hunting here in Colorado, which is ridiculous. So I've been trying to do the fight with that. Coloradoans for Responsible Wildlife Management is doing a great job at leading that fight. We got an event at the Capitol tomorrow and if everybody that's coming out. So that one's a big one as far as the fight goes. And as far as what's going on in Colorado for drawing tags, the commission is going through the 5-year big game season structure. And inside that, they have some recommendations. They're trying to get rid of all over-the-counter archery elk tags, but keep over-the-counter rifle tags. And that's for everybody. That's for residents and non-residents. So if anybody's been planning on coming out to Colorado doing an over-the-counter archery elk hunt, this is probably your last year to do it. What I've been involved in trying to fight for is keep over-the-counter elk tags for residents at a minimum. It's like, hey, we've seen this coming to a head. Our non-resident participation for archery elk in the over-the-counter units has gone up by 28% in the past 10 years. And I believe part of that is because all the other states in the past 10 years that used to have an over-the-counter archery elk hunt for non-residents have limited it and cut it off. And so everybody's just been flooding Colorado, and that trend is going to continue if they don't do something. So something had to give. This is what it is. We're just trying to keep it to where at least residents for the next 5 years have an over-the-counter archery elk option and see how that does, because I think that is going to curb it enough, curb the pressure enough to help the elk herds to where we can at least be saving it for the residents. Non-residents will be going to a draw like every other state. Montana, I believe, has done a great job of that. I just drew a general deer and elk tag there for this year. It took me 2 years of applying, got it. It's awesome. And I know it's going to be a quality elk hunt when I get there because it's limited. You're not going to be flooded with a bunch of stuff. And I just think Colorado can do the exact same thing. That's kind of what we're pushing for and fighting for.
Yeah. Well, you know, there has to be change in the management of these herds, or it'll just be decimated, you know. So, yeah, there's going to have to be change. Yeah, I don't quite understand keeping the over-the-counter rifle and doing away with the over-the-counter archery. It's like archery, there's less harvest success. Like, it's tougher, it's more difficult. And so therefore you can put more hunters on the landscape with less harvest of the elk. So it seems like that's like a really good management practice, but you know, some of these states tend to disagree or whatever, but I like the over the counter archery, like as a management tool, and, you know, partially because I'm a bow hunter, but also because of the lower harvests, like you're just going to take less elk off the landscape with more hunters on the landscape. And so, like, I think that's a great tool, because archery success, like especially in those Colorado over the counter, and you can probably speak to this better than I can, Lane, but archery success on elk, like I know here in Montana, is less than 10%, where if you go general season elk harvest with a rifle, you know, in the good units, you're going to be pushing closer to 50%. So that doesn't really make sense to me. Do you guys have like a Colorado Bow Hunters Association that helps you fight for things like that?
Yeah, I'm actually the Colorado Parks and Wildlife liaison for the Colorado Bow Hunters Association. This is a fight that I've been leading. We started over 5 years ago asking for this before I was an active member of the CBA, and this kind of is what kicked off my participation in it. Fighting for the 75-25 tag allocation. It used to be a 65-35. We got an extra 10% for the resident bow hunters because we seemed like that was a fair ask and compromise, while keeping 80-20 for the high demand hunts. Anything that took more than 6 points still stays at an 80-20 split where it used to be. So that was a fair compromise that we thought we got. And all my involvement in that is just a regular Joe got me into the position where I am now with the Colorado Bow Hunters Association, where I am the person that's showing up and speaking on behalf of the Colorado bow hunters and trying to get what's best for us, along with our president and some other members that are active and show up. So we're the ones leading the fight on this one for sure.
Oh, killer, Lane. Really good work getting involved. Like, you know, us as outdoorsmen, like we, you know, I've always kind of stayed out of the political side and just done my hunts. And then, but I've started to realize too, that it's not enough, that if I don't fight to protect it, if I don't get involved, if I don't donate my time, if I don't stay informed and inform my audience, like, you know, eventually it's just going to go away. So, man, like, I really appreciate you getting involved. And I totally get, like, you guys wanting to keep the residents open to over-the-counter archery and making the non-residents draw. Like you say, there's a multiple different states that do that, including my home state of Montana. And I think when you live in a state, you know, you should get special rights. Like, I know Montana, like, we sacrifice, make less money to be able to live here, to, you know, and we should enjoy the benefits of our home state. And we still want to let non-residents in and let them experience it like you drawing this year, but you also have to limit it or cap it, or otherwise you're going to over harvest the species. And I think, you know, an example of that is like our mule deer here in Montana. And, you know, there's still some good opportunity here. And I think we're going to bounce back. We're putting together a mule deer council here for to change some of the management. But our biggest issue here is like a 5-week general season mule deer for non-residents. There's 16,000 non-residents that draw, and every non-resident can hunt the rut with the rifle. And, you know, that was fine like back in the day when we had less residents, when we had less non-resident tags, when our mule deer populations are robust, where we're not dealing with drought or dealing with encroachment onto their landscape. But now things are starting to change where rifle hunters are more effective. A lot of guys going hard to where now the harvest is just too high and can't sustain. So our problem isn't disease. It's like over harvest and under management. They're going to have to start managing each unit, not a statewide management. So it's like there has to be change there. And my point is that I think these Western states, you have to take care of your residents first and then your non-resident opportunity. And non-resident opportunity does bring in a tremendous amount of revenue. So you don't want to do away with that. You're just going to have to limit it like your over-the-counter elk tags is like it's starting to get pretty populated, I would bet, in like a lot of your over-the-counter elk opportunities, because you're about the only state left with those, right?
Oh, 100%. You hit so many good points there. Talking, I'm going to try to go through and like hit some of them. The first one I want to talk about is you're talking about, hey, non-residents and residents do need some priority. That was reaffirmed in the State Regulation of Resident and Non-Resident Hunting and Fishing Act passed by Congress in 2005. Back in 2004, Arizona was sued because they're like, hey, it needs to be 50-50. And all these people that didn't understand the way that America's North American model for wildlife works. It's the management of these animals, and these animals are put in a trust for the state, for the trustees of the state. So the state has the management of them, and it doesn't matter if they live on private land or public land, they are owned by the people of the state. Well, that was a little muddled back in 2004. So in 2005, Congress is like, hey, we're gonna fix this, and we're gonna put a one-page bill out. And when was the last time Congress has ever put out a one-page bill so that it's crystal clear with nothing else? I can tell you that's how much and how this was backed, that says the animals are owned by the state, and the state is allowed to give preference and should give preference to the residents because of what they're doing and how they're living there. So that's something that I think is very confusing and that I ran into with a lot of non-residents and residents saying different completely things of, oh, well, it lives on public land, so it should be a 50-50 draw. That's not the way it works. I have elk that come and destroy my trees in my front yard. I can't draw a tag here without 5 points, without 5 years of waiting. And I never will. But just because they're on my property doesn't mean I get to go shoot them. Just because they're on public land doesn't mean that they're your animals and you can go shoot them too any more than I can. They're managed by the state. They're put into a trust by the state for the trustees of the state. And yes, there needs to be non-resident tags. I believe there should be opportunity for everybody. But at the end of the day, the residents of that state and every particular state that they're in should get some kind of benefit. Like you said, you're making way less money working up in Montana than you would be down here in Colorado. You should have a benefit for that. Not only that, you're paying for license registrations in your state, you're paying taxes in that state, all kinds of other things that you're doing that are helping with that. When you buy a bow or you buy a rifle in that state, you pay taxes that are going towards that anyway. Like there's a lot of stuff to go into it. But as far as like evolving and doing what's best for the wildlife, 100%, you can't be selling 16,000 deer tags during the rut to non-residents when your deer herd is already hurting. Yeah, that needs to be cut. That needs to be addressed, and they need to do that in the best way, the same way Colorado is trying to do that. And I think that right now our elk herds are healthy. We're just trying to curb it and get ahead of it so it doesn't get to an unhealthy place. And that's the biggest thing that I've been trying to stress with our Parks and Wildlife commissioners and everyone that we've been talking to, of like, hey, right now it's working. We want to curb this to where it doesn't get to a point to where it's not working, where it's actually detrimental to the wildlife. And I know I'm missing a bunch of stuff that you hit in there, but that's just some of the main points.
No, I got rambling on. I hit too many points there, Lane, but no, that's really good. Like on the resident, non-resident front. And yeah, I know, like, you know, Wyoming, like I would love to hunt some of their special deer units year after year, like their residents do. But, you know, if I want that opportunity, I have to move to Wyoming or I wait my few years. And I do love to travel to these different states and take place like in these extreme environments, like to be able to go have an adventure in Colorado means the world to me. And like this year, like I'm hoping to draw a deer tag down there. And it's, you know, been a handful of years since I've been there, but you know, I've waited my time, I've built my points. And, you know, the thing that I like about it is that Colorado manages their deer herd. So I know I'm going to go down and able to count on having a quality experience down there to be able to hunt mule deer because of the management. So I think it's great. Like you guys are staying in front of it because you do have robust elk herds and things. There's going to have to be change in the management across the United States, or we're going to start to lose the opportunity. Like there just aren't going to be the animals in these units. Like it is a renewable resource, but we have to actively manage it and actively change it because it's not the 70s or the 80s, or it's not the, even the 2000s or the 2010s, you know? So there has to be change, and it's just good. Like we have you looking out for us bow hunters there. It's good we've got these organizations. Like I love Howl. I love who's the Dan Gates that
Dan
heads
Gates,
up?
Colorado yeah. is for Responsible Wildlife yeah. Management, leading the fight on what is Prop 91 for the mountain yeah. lion ban here in Colorado. And I cannot stress that enough. If anybody gets anything from this, hey, like we want elk tags, but we need to win that fight, and we need to kick that anti-hunting group in the teeth and show them that they're going to lose their $30 million that they've committed here in that fight, so that next time their donors are looking at them like, I don't think we're going to really donate to that because you guys just got beat by this group of hunters, and it's showing that we can mobilize and we can beat everybody else, because that is 100% an attack on hunting. And the way that that bill is wrote is it's going to ban any pursuit of an animal. It's like that is what hunting is. Any tracking, pursuit, chasing an animal is going to be illegal. Well, that's everything that we do from the scout to the actual hunt. And they're trying to call that trophy hunting and ban it. So that if there's anything that we can get out of this, that any of the listeners get out of that podcast, is that Coloradoans for Responsible Wildlife Management is leading that hunt or that fight to save our hunting everywhere. Because if that passes in Colorado, man, it's going to start passing in other states too. States where you don't think it's possible, but if they see that they can get with $30 million, get it to pass here, well, then in this next state with half the population, they're going to go dump $30 million and they're going to blow it out of the water and they're really going to make it pass. So we need to have that fight won here right now.
What, so guys that are listening to this podcast that are hearing us talk about the different management or hear about hunting rights that may be taken away, like, what do you suggest for like the average listener, the average hunter or outdoorsman? I know like this year I took part in a hounds hunt just to learn about it. Like I've always been a spot and stalk guy and I didn't know much about it. And so, you know, I was like able to connect with a buddy and really learn a ton about it to where I can speak on it more intelligently and like and where I really see the passion and the love for like the dogs and chasing these cats and managing the resource. And so it really like broadened my horizons just being able to go with a couple different houndsmen. And you know, we treat a couple females that we passed and looking for a male, and it didn't quite come together, but I'll go again. And I was just really impressed by their knowledge, tracking skills, their passion for it, love for the dogs, and their love for being able to chase mountain lions. So like, I know that's helped me understand it a little bit better, but like what would you suggest for like people listening to this podcast to help protect their hunting rights, to help with like the season structure, like you're talking about the bow hunting for residents in Colorado, like you've obviously got involved, Lane, and taken it on your shoulders to like head up a bunch of this and be able to talk intelligently on it and get involved. Like what can the rest of us do, or what's the best way to get involved?
I think one of the easiest and the best ways is kind of do what you did and educate yourself about what's going on, the way other hunters are and the passion for it and the way that it helps, specifically with the mountain lions, with actually using hounds and how it helps reduce the female harvest rate and helps it to where you're harvesting mature males instead of having to like just a target of opportunity and shooting any mountain lion that you see out there. States that have hound hunting actually have a better success rate of killing mature toms and less females are killed than states that don't. And then talking to your neighbors about it, talking to your coworkers, talking to your friends, and just letting them know, you know, hey, just because I'm not a mountain lion hunter, just because I'm not a houndsman, doesn't mean that I don't support it. And I think that's the biggest thing that hunters have faced in the past, and we're starting to learn and kind of come together on, is we've always been fractionated with the rifle hunter versus the archery hunter and the compound hunter versus the trad hunter, and heaven forbid you use a crossbow. And we really love to hate on each other, but we really need to come together on this, and everything that's an ethical, legal chase hunting is something that we should support. And I do want to stress the ethical and the legal inside that too, because you got some crazy people going out there and doing dumb things, and we need to denounce that as well. But at the same time, just if you're educated on what's going on and you can talk to your neighbors and educate them that way, if maybe somebody asks them about that, we lost this wolf bill here in Colorado by less than 0.5%. If people had just been willing to talk to their neighbors a little bit about it and bring it up, don't wait for them to ask, bring it up to them, be like, hey, you know, this thing's coming up. This is what's going on. That's the very first step. The second step, it's super easy to get involved. I got so blown, like I was blown away how easy it is to get involved with the Colorado Bow Hunters Association and the Colorado Parks and Wildlife, just showing up to their commission meetings. You can get on, you can fill out a form to speak virtually. You don't even need to drive in there to talk, to go and show up and to some of the Senate hearings that are going on and the state congressional hearings are super easy. The websites are always messed up to try to find what's going on. But once you get it figured out, it's easy to get involved in that and to start writing your state representative and talking to them about what's going on. It's actually a lot easier than what you think. And I think those are just like the main easiest ways to get involved. If you have a state bow hunters association or state hunting organization to get involved with, do that first. Get involved with that, see what they're doing, and then ask how you can volunteer. And then just start showing up to the meetings, start listening. You can get on and see the agenda. I don't need to show up and hear them talking about what they're doing with the beavers. I totally believe the staff is doing what's best for that. And I'm not a beaver trapper. I'm not showing up and talking about that. I'm not even spending my time listening to it right now. But when it comes to what's going on with big game and the big game draws and stuff, I 100% am showing up and I'm listening and I'm talking. And it's amazing how much your voice is heard when you just show up and talk.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes good sense, man. Just showing up, being educated, I think that's great advice. And then,
yeah,
you know, it's like also supporting these organizations that are fighting for us. So it's pretty easy to be a part of the Bow Hunters Association for your state and for the states that you like to hunt. And for me, like, I know money's tight for everybody and for working class, but for me, it's so important to protect bow hunting that, it's easy for me to be able to donate a little bit of money or to become a member. And I just got done speaking at the Montana Bow Hunters Association, donating my time, driving up there for that, talking to guys up there, like, you know, just doing my part or what I can do. And then, you know, as far as me personally, like having you on the podcast or trying to educate my audience of how they can get involved. And then like Hal's a great one as well. And you can use these as resources, just like you stated, to become educated on them. And then, you know, just don't be afraid to speak up. Like, you are, you know, a resident of the state you belong to, or you hunt in states that have bow hunting seasons, or like when you stay informed with these states and they have like open input on what they're trying to do in their management practices, like just have confidence in your thoughts and feelings on it and be able to voice that through public comment. I know they put out a lot of stuff here in Montana, and for a while, like, I just didn't have the confidence to be able to explain or express my opinion, to where ultimately, like, you know, I'm a resident of Montana. I hunt here, pay taxes here, try to stay informed to the best of my abilities, where it's like, if I have an idea or a thought about something, voice that, because you know, the guys at FWP, they don't know all this different input, or maybe they haven't thought about it from your angle or from a bow hunter's angle, to where, you know, your input can have impact. And then also, you know, there's other guys that feel the same way that you do, to where when you voice that, you know, they can, you know, like, get ideas on their management practice that maybe they hadn't thought about. So I just think that's a great tip. Hal's another one. Like, I love supporting them as they really fight for hunting rights. And, you know, those are the big ones for me. And I know there's other quality organizations out there, but those are the ones that are really important to me and to what I do and to where I put my support. And so, you know, if you guys love elk, maybe the Elk Foundation is a good place to put your money, or, you know, like, there's a bunch of organizations that you can search out and donate to without breaking the bank. But I think it's important to put our dollars behind them as well.
I 100% agree with that. As far as educating yourself, Robbie with Blood Origins, another great group, has a really good mountain lion film out right now called Lionheart. If you get a chance to watch that somewhere, he's kind of touring the country, playing that in different areas. That one is awesome. And that will really give you an insight as to what these hounds people are doing and how much they care for these animals that they're hunting and that they're using for the hunt. Absolutely love that film. If you get a chance to watch it and educate, another great one to kind of look at, you know.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, that is a great film. He is doing a great job to help educate us of what's going on. And yeah, what a great filmmaker as well. So they're just doing, like, select showings in cities. I'm sure it'll come out in YouTube eventually, right?
Yeah, I know it's his plan to eventually have it come out in YouTube, and I hope it comes out before this the vote on this mountain lion ban here in Colorado. And I do think that he's kind of planning on timing that just right to where it can get shared enough so that before people vote on that, they know, hey, you know, this isn't what these anti-hunters are kind of trying to push it and make it seem.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%, man. Yeah. That's a great point. So, like, as far as, like, the season structure in Colorado, like who decides this? Like, you're fighting for different season structure for the next 5 years, to where you guys are really laying out how Colorado is going to work for the next 5 years. Like, how do you get through to them, or what is the process of this? Or, you know, like, we're spending this time to, like, talk about it and talk about our opinions on what should happen. Like, how do guys get involved with that? Or if you're a Colorado resident, how do you get involved, or what's the best way?
The biggest thing is if you could sign up 10 days before the next commission meeting and speak virtually or speak in person. But if not, just get on Google Colorado Parks and Wildlife Commissioners and send some of the commissioners an email. We have some really good commissioners out there that will listen. Artero was one of my favorites. Like, he is the sports person representative here for the state, and he really does a good job of trying to represent the sports people and here in the state and non-residents as well. I believe he's extremely fair. Most of the commission, I think, is actually extremely fair when it comes to this, and they're willing and they want to do what's best for the wildlife and for the hunters as a whole. And so if you can shoot them an email, that what they get a ton of emails about it. If you really want to be heard, in my opinion, you sign up to talk at one of the meetings. It's really easy. You don't need to get on there and give a 3-minute speech. You get 2 to 3 minutes to talk, depending on how many people are there. And you can just get on and say, hey, I'm a non-resident and I support that residents should have a right to have over-the-counter archery elk tags, and that I should be in a little bit different pool. Or say whatever you want. I'm not telling you what to say, but just get on there. You can say 10 words and then be like, that's all I have. I just wanted my voice to be heard. But if you do have 2 minutes worth of stuff, get on there and say 2 minutes worth of stuff, because that's where you're going to be heard the most, is when you actually show up and you talk. It's really funny is that states with over, there's a study in the Journal of Wildlife Management that states with over-the-counter hunting licenses for residents are more effective in managing elk than populations that are more restrictive with licensing systems. And so there's a science behind this too. You can get on, you can talk about that, but there's science-based data saying that states that have over-the-counter for residents only is a little bit better at effective management. And there's all kinds of things that you can get into as to why that's there. But just if you, at a minimum, show up and talk, that's the best way to make it happen.
Well, and two, you know, like we talked about Colorado deer and the limited entry for us non-residents and residents, like, you know, really, it just ensures that you're going to have a quality experience when you get there, that there are critters there to go hunt. And where that elk hunt, like, you still have robust elk herds, but you know, it is getting so popular that there's a lot of hunting pressure there, to where, you know, I don't know that the experience is like an A+ experience, like when you go to hunt there. So it's like being able to limit that a little bit and make sure that you're going to have like really robust elk herds, and then you're going to have a quality experience there, is actually better than letting everybody in and not having any elk left. And so
I got so many buddies that have told me, I will not come and hunt over the counter with you again until it's limited, because it's a waste of my time and money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly right. And quality experience, like more older age class animals, like, you know, if a non-resident, if we're traveling across the country to go hunt a place, like, we want to know that we've got an opportunity, or that we're going to have a quality experience. And so, like, that's what you guys are trying to get in front of, for sure, is to make sure that you have that. I don't quite understand their thinking about keeping general rifle seasons for elk and doing away with the general bow seasons. Like, what's the thought process there? Or are we just such a small population of the hunting community that we don't have enough people fighting for the bow seasons? Or what do you think it is, Lane? Because it just seems like it should be opposite to me.
So in my opinion, and commissioners have made this extremely clear when I bring this up, if you're going to limit over-the-counter archery, you damn sure better limit over-the-counter rifle. Otherwise, you're going to have a flood of people going from archery after they can't draw their archery tag and go and hunt over-the-counter rifle. And the commissioner said, well, I don't think that's going to happen because bow hunters won't do that. And when about 30 of us got up there and said, no, that's absolutely what will happen if I can't hunt my home state and there's an over-the-counter option, they said, well, how are you going to fund it? How are you going to fund it if we lose all this money? And so it's coming down to the money. And I know that there are staffers out there that are willing. In fact, the way that this 5-year big game season structure works is the Parks and Wildlife staff puts out, hey, this is what we have right now. This is alternative one, and this is alternative two. Both alternatives are from Parks and Wildlife staff. They're supported there, but we have one that we prefer. And it just happens that their preferred is get rid of over-the-counter archery and keep over-the-counter rifle. But option two on that is to get rid of over-the-counter rifle and cut it by about 10% of the tags. And that is one of the staff proposals. That's what I've been pushing for, is that we go with alternative two, which is keep over-the-counter archery for residents, limit it for non-residents. And then alternative one, which under the rifle side, which is get rid of it for non-residents, limit it. Don't get rid of it, limit it for non-residents and keep it over-the-counter for residents. And it came down to, how are you going to fund this? How are you going to pay for this? How are we going to take this hit? And it's like, well, at the end of the day, you can't be doing responsible wildlife management if all you care about is the money. The flip side for that is, if you get rid of all the money, you can't do responsible wildlife management either. But we had a $56 million surplus 3 years ago in our parks and wildlife budget from on the wildlife side, because of the way that we changed up our big game draw. The first year that we went from making everybody front their money, we had a 20% increase in revenue. The next year, we had almost another 20% increase in revenue. So it went up 40% in 2021. And then 2022, they're sitting on this surplus and they're like, hey, we need to spend this money, otherwise we're going to lose it. And they came up with programs to spend it. That's great. But now don't throw it in my face that just because we're going to cut out a couple $1 million, we can't afford it. You could get rid of every over-the-counter non-resident elk tag and you wouldn't have touched that 56 million. I believe it would have been, the numbers flow everywhere from 34 million to 54 million. And 2 years and 2 meetings ago, it was mentioned that they had a $56 million surplus. So I really hate that it's thrown in our faces of, hey, how are you going to fund it when you found ways to spend $56 million 2 years ago, if that makes sense. But if you cut it by 10%, we're only talking about a couple of million. And I know that that says only a couple million, but when we had a $56 million surplus 3 years ago, that's a literally ridiculous to say that we can't cut a couple million out to do what's best for our wildlife. And that the reason that we can't do it and we're only doing it for archery and not rifle is that it's hard. Number one, that was one excuse given, is it's going to be hard and it's going to be a big change. We don't want to do that yet. And then two, how are we going to fund it? Well, you already have the funding and you're going to figure the funding out, and we will find ways to get you more funding. I don't care what it is. And I'm not saying increase the cost of a non-resident tag. Although I'll tell you this right now, for a non-resident to come hunt Colorado, it's $808 around there. It's ballpark. Whereas when I applied for Wyoming this year, it was $2,000. So there's a little bit of a difference there. When I applied for New Mexico, what's their special tag? 1200. Montana, for me to come do a general elk and deer, it was almost $1,300. It was like 1200 and something. So we're a little underfunded there when it comes to it. But I'm not saying raise the price on non-residents. I already think they pay enough. But there's something that we can do there. And you cannot throw the funding back in my face. And it actually makes me mad when they do.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Well, and they just have to be creative. Like you say, if you're basing your wildlife management all on the money, like it isn't going to work out. Like eventually, if you keep that general season rifle open for elk, like you're not going to have the opportunity, or the elk herds, or they're going to be start to be knocked down pretty good. And with that, like, you're going to get less non-residents that apply, less non-resident tags, to where the other way, like you say, you take a bit of a hit up front, but you're building a better, stronger elk herd where you're going to get more non-residents that want to apply, and you're going to get that application fee every time. And yeah, there's definitely, like, you know, we don't want to see it get to be a rich man's sport, but there too, like, you can raise non-resident fees and even resident fees. Like, you know, I know here for me in Montana, for the $130 I pay a year, it's like, okay, you can bump that a little bit for all your residents and make up some of that resource. And I'm sure you feel the same way in Colorado. Like, you don't want to be priced out, and residents want to have that opportunity. But there's some room there to be able, like, I'm sure guys would add $10 to their Colorado elk tag if they had or were insured that they're going to have better elk hunting in the future and they're going to have a sustainable herd. And so it isn't all about the money, but there's creative ways to make up that money. And if you start, you know, basing all your management on money, you're not going to have any elk left to hunt, and then it's going to go to zero. So you have to manage for the long term, I feel like, too.
Oh, 100%. I can't agree with you more on that quality hunt. The reason I applied for Montana and drew up there this year after 2 or 3 years of applying is I know that when I get there, it's going to be better than any over-the-counter unit that I have here in Colorado, just because it's limited and it's not flooded with a bunch of people. I know it's going to be a quality hunt. If we have that here in Colorado, it's going to do the exact same thing, and more people are going to want to come here. If you want to up the tag fees $10, I'm more than happy to do that. I will say this, as a resident of Colorado, it is more expensive for me just to apply and build points in my home state for all of our big game species than it is for me to apply and build points as a non-resident in Utah, Arizona, or Nevada. And I haven't done the math on Montana after everything works out, but I paid over $270 this year just in application and point fees as a resident. And when I apply for Arizona, it's less than $2 or $200. When I apply for Nevada, it's about $200. When I apply for Utah, it's about $200. But in my home state, it cost me $270 to build points and apply. And that's before I draw anything.
Yeah. So my card just got
already.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, you probably just got hit for points here in Colorado for bighorn sheep, huh?
Yeah, bighorn sheep and goats. Yeah, $100 a piece. And you know, I'd love the opportunity one of these days. So it's definitely worth it for me. But it is getting pretty expensive as, like, a blue collar do-it-yourself hunter across the West. And so you're right, we do have to be careful about fees. But yeah, like Wyoming just raised their fees $2,000 for the special elk tag there. You know, it's like, you know, and I get why they did it, is the special elk and deer tags were put in place to get better odds and to move the pools around a little bit for the people willing to pay more. They still have their regular elk fee, you know, so I see why they did it. And Wyoming does a good job of looking out for their residents and, you know, not sticking it to the non-residents, because we still have the opportunity to go there and take part in their resource and in their state. But yeah, they're hitting us hard. You know, it's like it is getting fairly expensive to be able to apply and go to these different states. And you're right that your home state should be affordable for the blue collar average guy to be able to build points or to be able to take part in the draws and in the hunts around their home state. So yeah, I think it's first and foremost, like, you have to look out for your residents.
I 100% agree. And you have to look out for your elk herds. And I get it takes money, but with Colorado particularly, we only have 280,000 elk here in the state. But if you were to total up all of the elk in Montana, Oregon, Idaho, New Mexico, Utah, and Arizona, that comes over to 742,000 elk. But if you combine all of the non-resident elk tags that those states sell, it only hits 66,900. But Colorado as a whole sells over 72,000 non-resident elk tags in 2022. And it's like, we're already making way more money than all of these other states combined just as a single state. How come it's taking us so much more money, you know? Or have you just gotten used to getting so much more money that you can't do it? Because we're making more money than all these other states combined, and they're doing a great job of managing their wildlife. Where's our money actually going?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm glad you brought that up. That's a good question. Well,
it's just an insane number. When I first saw it, I was like, there's no way this can be true. And that New Mexico number includes the non-resident private land only sales, because they're only supposed to give out like, 6% go to non-residents. But if you look at the numbers with their private land only tag sales, it gets bumped up to 34% in New Mexico goes to non-residents. But that's because they're making a rich person sport. That means that almost 30% of those non-resident tags are just rich people. I don't want to call it rich people because I would do it too, but extremely dedicated, or people with more money and more funds going there to hunt than just the average Joe that's applying. And I don't want to see that happen here in Colorado. I don't want to see that happen anywhere. I want my kids to be able to go hunt with, you know, at a reasonable price in Wyoming, in Montana, and not have to rely on buying a $10,000 to $15,000 to $20,000 private land only tag. Because if that's the case, they ain't going to hunt unless they do a lot better in school.
yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's we have to look out, like, you know, that's part of the beauty of living in the United States. And I have people that come visit me, like from Australia and from Canada, that just wish they could have our North American model of conservation. You know, it's like it is the beautiful thing that us average guys can go have these experiences and have these adventures. But you do have to fund it in a certain way, and I understand that. But you know, you also have to look out for the average guy, and we have to make these states, these commissioners, we have to make them realize that as well. And it's you know, it's a battleground for sure. It's like constantly trying to take things away or costing more money. And so, you know, we have to make our voices heard and continue to fight for this opportunity, because it is a beautiful thing. Like, I know it's enriched my life, like really helped shape me in all facets of my life, you know, from, you know, the bow hunting adventures, like, just teach me a lot. But it's made me better family man, better in business. It's made me better at everything. And so it's enriched my life so much that, I just have to make sure that I'm keeping educated and helping protect it for future generations, for our kids, helping protect it for, like, the other blue collar bow hunters out there. And so, like, that's a big part of it, man. And so it's kind of spooky out there where we're at in 2024. So we just have to continue to stay informed and continue to fight for what we love to do, and fight to protect the resource as well, you know, that we don't have over harvest, that we do have management in place, that we do listen to our biologists, that we do have quality biologists, you know, in these places, so that we can continue to have opportunity in these wild adventures out there. So, man, it is a battleground. So I just appreciate your work on it, Lane, like really trying to fight for us bow hunters and fight for Colorado and fight for the resource. Like, I think it's extremely important.
Hey, I'm trying, man. And I appreciate everything you're doing too, and having me come on here and talk about it. I think there are a ton of people out there that are doing the exact same thing in their home state, and here in Colorado, there, Montana, everywhere. I mean, look what Wyoming residents just got done that for them up there. There's a lot of people working hard. I'm just a single person that's out there trying to do the same thing, because I want my kids to be able to go out and hunt, you know. I want them to have a healthy elk herd to go out and hunt when they reach that age. I got 2 more years before I can hunt here in Colorado. I have their hunter safety, so I'm applying to all these other states where they're allowed to try to get them a hunt. We're going to Alaska this year we're going to go do a fly-in moose hunt because they can go hunt up there. Like, I'm trying to get them this opportunity because it's something that they love, and I just want to protect it everywhere. I've wrote into stuff up in Alaska trying to save hunting up there. And I've spoken to, hey, if you're going to cut it for somebody, cut it on the non-resident side. Don't cut it on the resident side. So it's not like I'm being selfish and like just in my home state. I'm saying that everywhere I go talk. If you followed anything that's going on with Alaska, I know you have, there's a lot of federal versus state fights going on up there. And it's like, hey, you got to save this for the resident, protect it for the resident first. And then it's still going to be something that the non-residents want to come here and participate in as well and help pay for.
Yeah, man, you're hunting all over. You got some good spots up there in Alaska. You've had some wild adventures for caribou and moose up there. It's like a crazy wild place for adventure up there, isn't it? It's worth saving your pennies and going up there and having an adventure.
Oh, man, you've been bitten by that bug, too. You've been up there. You've seen it. But that is, you want to talk about the most special place in my heart. It is that area of Alaska that I go to. And I've tried different areas. The whole state's awesome and beautiful, but this area that I go to around Fairbanks is just, it's a little bit extra special. I can almost guarantee you I'm going to see the Northern Lights a couple times. I know I'm going to see wolves. I'm going to see brown bears. I'm going to just see everything. I see doll. Last time I was classing doll sheep. It's just my absolute favorite place to go in the world. Now that I get to take my boys up this year, I'm pretty dang excited about it, man. It's going to be fun.
Dude, I bet. So you're doing a fly-in hunt. So yep. You'll have like a base camp, and then you're going to go for moose up there. And you've killed like one, I remember, probably a couple great moose up there.
I've been a part of a few good moose hunts up there and kills. I've never actually been the one to pull the trigger. The first time, it was me and my buddy Lance Banning. And he hands me the gun, and I had my bow over off to the side. And I'm like, no, you shoot it. And he's like, well, you invited me on this hunt. I'm like, well, that's why I'd be a jerk if I shot it. You shoot the first one. And so we shot one up there together, went back, and then my brother-in-law shot one on that trip. And then we went back, and my buddy Darren shot one, like, sitting right next to me. He looked at me. He's like, hey, man, I'm an old man. I'm already 60. Like, I'm not going to get to come do this much. Can I shoot this moose? I was like, yeah, Darren, shoot the moose. So I've been a part of some really fun hunts up there, but I actually haven't pulled the trigger. And hopefully on this trip, it's not me. I'm trying to get my wife one. She's coming with too. So I'll get mine eventually. I really just want her to come up there with the boys and have the boys see mom shoot awesome moose.
Oh, that's killer, man. Yeah, I just remember seeing some of your epic photos of the moose. So if for some reason, I thought you had harvested one, but I know you've killed some great caribou up there. And then
that's fun.
Dude, it's so wild. The Northern Lights up there, you know, it's like we'll get some of the Northern Lights in Montana and I'll get a green hue or a red hue. It's different up there. Like, man, when you look at it up in the Arctic up there, it's like it moves and breathes around you. Like I have stayed up all night long, like staring at those things, trying to capture photos of it as it just moves and rotates these like green strands of like the Northern Lights. It is really special up there, man. And I did one moose float hunt. I was unsuccessful. I did see 10 bulls up there. And like you, I'm really committed with my bow and trying to kill one of those things. And it didn't quite come together. But I definitely need to put it together again and go do it again. And like you, I've also done a couple caribou hunts up there. And, you know, airing a couple caribou bulls is like some of the highlights of my bow hunting career. So I definitely love Alaska and got to get back up there. But yeah, man, it's a wild adventure up there. It's really cool. You're able to take your entire family up there, your wife and your two boys, right? You're going to take both of them?
Yep. Yeah, it kind of came together this last week. The pilots that we use up there called and said, hey, we had this cancellation. Are you guys interested in picking it up? Like, you're always up here. And I was like, yes, absolutely. Let's do it. And then I was like, hey, how do you feel about flying in a 10-year-old? And they're like, hey, if you're comfortable with it, we're comfortable with it, because it's going to be a lake hunt. And so it's not a float hunt or anything like that. And they're like, yeah, if you're comfortable with it, bring them up. So we're going to do it. And dude, I cannot wait for them to see the Northern Lights. Because like you, the first time I saw it up there, Lance and I stayed up all night taking pictures. I burned through like 3 camera batteries because it was also probably 15 degrees outside that night, just running the camera, trying to take some pictures of it, dude. It's the first time you've ever thought, man, are aliens real? Because this is crazy. There's no way this is natural. It is just the coolest thing ever. I cannot wait. I really hope my boys get to experience that up there.
Yeah, that's wild, man. Yeah, good for you. Yeah, you just book that hunt and then figure out how to pay for it, because it is a wild experience and we only live once. So it's like hooked on the Alaskan Yukon moose are so killer. And moose have never been like super high on my list. Like I for some reason or another, it's like it's just not the species that gets me going. But when I did that opportunity up for Alaskan Yukon, I got hooked. It's like they're so big. And then they're racks, and they're like the biggest deer species that we can go hunt. And then a couple years ago, when I had that Shiras tag in my home state, I just fell in love with hunting those things, man. It was like, they're so difficult. They're so random where you run into them. And I really got to learn a ton about them. And then to be able to arrow one in the end that was a good representation of a Shiras bull just meant the world to me. And so, yeah, this year when apps came up and things, I was looking a little bit closer at some of those moose hunts. And then, yeah, I've also really been thinking about and trying to get back up to Alaska. And so I got to pull the trigger. I know it's not this year, but I'm thinking next year I got to put something together and get back up there, because it is pretty special.
Yeah, dude, let's talk about that. Let's get something figured out. I love it up there. It's my favorite. But when you grunt in a moose and they come in and you just hear the oh, oh, and after not seeing a moose for 8 days and then that happens, you want to talk about the biggest adrenaline rush you can get and the biggest dump. It is the coolest thing. You're like, please be 50 inches, please be 50 inches. And it is the coolest thing ever, dude. It didn't matter that I was the shooter or not. It's just the most cool thing you can get. And I'm hooked on them. If I could go up there and hunt them every single year instead of hunting elk, I would. It is just that much fun to me. And the hard part is you'll go 8 to 10 days without seeing one. But then when you do see one, oh, it just makes it that much more special.
Yeah, that's super cool, man. I'm glad you've got to experience that. Yeah, we should definitely talk about trying to put something together. But yeah, that's amazing. And then, yeah, I know you're always hunting in your home state. And then you've got a couple more tags this year. You drew Montana deer and elk, which is really cool. And then also before the podcast, you told me you drew a New Mexico coos hunt too.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. Dude, I've gotten hooked on chasing those coos deer in late January. And I'm really excited to be in a limited draw unit this year. So I cannot wait for that. That's going to be fun. Those things, man, they got my ticket. It is, you want the exact opposite of moose hunt. You're seeing them every single day, but you ain't getting close to them. So it is so much fun. And then this year when I was hunting with my buddy Adam down there, we got too close. We ended up being 10 yards from one. And 10 yards, way too close on a coos deer. 100 yards too far, 10 yards too close. We're trying to figure it out. So it's a good time, man.
Yeah, so, that's killer. I'm glad
really excited for Montana, because I haven't hunted Montana. That's where I killed my first deer ever. It was a whitetail $5 non-resident tag back in the day because they were overpopulated the eastern part of the state. And so I'm really excited to get back up there and chase some mule deer and chase some elk up there. It's going to be fun.
Oh, good for you, man. You coming up September?
That depends. I'm not exactly sure. I haven't planned it out yet. With the moose hunt's going to be in the middle of September. And then I got a buddy that's got the Wyoming commissioner's tag, and he's going to be chasing elk in Wyoming somewhere. So I'm going to be helping him for sure. And then my buddy Omar, he goes by Crispy 11B. Great dude. He drew a really sweet elk tag in New Mexico, and he was on the phone with me this morning. He's like, you got to come down. I'm like, man, I got to figure out I should be drawing a good elk tag here in Colorado. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to turn that in and just wait for next year on that. So I can go and focus on all these other hunts with everybody.
Yeah, you got a busy year, man. It's good. You're a really good friend too. It's like taking time out of your schedule to go help out on their hunts and experience it with them. And then, you know, just from your moose stories alone, of letting those guys harvest those moose and to have good friends, you have to be a good friend, and you do a good job of that.
Well, you know how it is, dude. I don't care if I'm the one pulling the trigger. It's just fun to be out there. So like, oh, cool. You want to pull the trigger? That works for me, man. Like I have just as much fun when I'm there running the camera or helping out than if I'm the one pulling the trigger. And I know you're the exact same way. So yeah, it's an excuse to get out there.
Yeah. Good for you, man. Well, thanks for everything you're doing for us bow hunters and in Colorado there. And we'll continue the good fight. Always good to catch up with you, Lane. So just appreciate your time and appreciate you coming on.
Brian, I always appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Yep. Good man.
Bye.
All right, guys. It's a podcast. Thanks to Lane for coming on and sticking up for hunting rights and fighting so hard for different seasons, making our voice heard. So, yeah, it's great. So thanks to Lane. Thanks to you guys for listening in, Eastman's for their support, sponsors for today's show, Silencer Central, Zamberlin, Swagger, and Black Ovis, so give those companies some love, and we're busy over at Eastman's, just ran over to the office, did a bunch of work on that Elk Collective, putting out some new content for that, some work on the Mule Deer Collective, so really pumped about that. You guys can check out those two things that we're offering over there at Eastman's. And, I'm just in the heart of bear season here. Did a good backpacking mission this past weekend, had a giant bear in a basin. It was almost like too good to be true. You know, I was able to stage up 500 yards away and just have a perfect vantage point on this basin. And, I waited there for 5.5 hours and the bear never came out. So it's just what it is. I just keep giving myself a chance and, you know, it's just, this effort is so good as well. It's like, I had to backpack 3 or 4 hours to get in there, had my, you know, spotting scope, my pistol, my overnight bag, bivy sack. So I wasn't too heavy, but I had to be around 30, 35 pounds. And then, you know, to backpack in 3-4 hours to the vantage point, you know, another hour down to the bear, and then waited till dark and then had a 4-hour backpack out. So you're talking like, you know, 8 hours of like a cardio workout, like, you know, and I get to run and I get to train and, you know, I can fit in hour runs and a lot of times I get 1.5 hours or even up to 2 hours on weekends, but very rarely do I get that 8 hours of cardio work. And so it's like crucial for my endurance training and being ready for the fall. And it's so fun to do it while I'm, you know, chasing something that I love to hunt, like black bears. So it's all good. It's probably good I didn't kill them and I get to keep going and keep looking for one. But it was a giant light colored chocolate, just a beautiful bear. Just the way it goes. It's just hunting. And two of those empty chances are full sends, you know, so far. And it's a long hike out with the headlamp and, you know, all that stuff's just good for my mental training, for my physical training. And so really hitting off all cylinders here and feeling great. And it's starting to heat up here in my home valley. So I'm going to start looking around in the evenings around here as well and keep after these bears, see if I can't get one killed. So I'm pumped. They're not easy with bow and arrow. They're not easy with any weapon, but especially these bigger bears, they're the exception, not the rule. But I'm going to keep after them. It's just heating up and getting good. So I'm pumped. But thanks to you guys for support of the podcast, reviews on iTunes and Spotify or wherever you listen to the podcast. It really helps out. The follows on social media, trying to just continue to put out good social media content and also like great podcast content, especially as we're starting to lead into summer and into our hunting season. I'm just so pumped and starting to put together some pretty big adventures, for 25, talking about hunting Asiatic water buffalo, which is amazing, up in Northern Territory. It's going to be a huge adventure. Got a Hawaii trip that's going to come up. I got to buy my flights like here this week, but going to go hunt with my buddies out there, go chase mouflon sheep and axis. I've just fallen in love with both of those species. So be out there for a week chasing those things around and starting to think about another Alaskan Yukon trip for moose. It's just like I almost got to give up an elk season for it, but I would really like to harvest one of those. I got hooked on Shiras moose, like hunting them, you know, not this past season, but the season before, which I guess is like 2 seasons ago. And I would really like an Alaskan Yukon. I just know how tough they are with a bow. but I'm just starting to put together some plans while us non-residents can still do it up there and do-it-yourselfer adventure, big float hunt. So, yeah, I'll let you guys know, but pretty pumped about the prospects here coming up and giant adventures. So, and this season, I mean, mule deer and elk are the funnest things I do. Pronghorns, bears, like, you know, I definitely have a full schedule and, can't wait for some of these draws to come out. Just see if I can get dang lucky and pull a sheep tag or, you know, a really good sought after tag. And if not, no big deal. I'll have a full season and places to go, but, pretty fun playing with the prospects here. So, well, good luck to you guys in the draws. Thanks for the support on the podcast. Really pulling for your guys' success this season. Just keep working hard towards your goals. It pays off. This backcountry hunting, this do-it-yourself hunting, it's the long game of continuing to improve your skill sets and get better, and then we get to prove it come hunting season. So pulling for your guys' success. And with that, I'll check in with you guys next week.